Greetings to the crew of the Gaian Navigation Experiment, to friends, allies, and students scattered across the planet, and anyone else who cares to listen. This is your navigator, John Lash, recording on Saturday, the 16th of February, 2013. This is Nav Briefing number 47, and the title is The Ultimate Secret of the Gaian Dakinis. Today is a special day for me. It's a unique day that I celebrate every year because this is the birthday of Jan Michel Kerouac, who was born in 1952. Jan was my companion in life and my wife for a while, and the closest person to me in the world for 28 years. I met Jan on January 18th, 1967, in a seedy tenement apartment in New York City in the Lower East Side, 144 Avenue B. And back in those days, in the first few months that I met Jan, she was only 15 when we met. There was music floating around in the air. Of course, the Rolling Stones. And we listened to the Stones. We also listened to Donovan. And we listened to Rubber Soul by the Beatles. But there was an album that came out in 1967, in the year we met. It was called Mixed Bag by Ritchie Havens. And I remember very well in that cold, cold January, cold month of January, and New York can get very, very cold, with snow piled up in the streets, in this really marginally Puerto Rican neighborhood of the Lower East Side. Jan and I would sit huddled by my Motorola phonograph and listen to Ritchie Havens together while we talked. And one of the songs we listened to was called High Flying Bird.
There's a high flying bird flying way up in the sky, and I wonder if she looks down as she goes on by. She's flying so free and easy in the sky. Oh Lord, look at me here. Hey, I'm rooted like a tree. Mine. She ain't never seen the sun.
never stop trying. Then one day, my woman up and died. Oh Lord, she up and died now. Hey, she just up and died. Well, she wanted to fly, and the only way to fly is die, 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 die. There's a high flying bird flying way up in the sky.
So the song says, oh Lord, look at me here. I'm rooted like a tree. Got those sit down, can't cry, oh Lord, gonna die blues. And every year on this day, sometimes on other days of the year, I get those sit down, can't cry, oh Lord, gonna die blues. And that's the moment that I like. I like that moment. Because that's a moment I feel closer to Jan than ever. And it's never a moment when I don't feel close to Jan. So I don't know if you've heard those lyrics. That song by Richie Havens is a part of the folklore of the 60s. Practically archaic. It's practically medieval in the time frame that we're living in today. But that is the song for this day. And that is the song for the message I give you on this day. And I give this message not only to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, I give this message to the world. Because now, from this moment on, I speak to the world. And I have something to say about the human condition. I have something to say about the human potential, if you will. And from now on, I say it in a different way. And I always speak. And I have the privilege to live as I do in the presence of Jan Kerouac. She is the Nahual's woman. Whenever I make one of these recordings, these NAB briefings, or any other recording that I make and post on the internet or have posted for me, I'm always mindful of the time frame in which I speak. You know, here I am recording on Saturday, the 16th of February, 2013. And as I speak, I'm aware of the fact that you will be listening to my voice some hours later, maybe some days later. Some people will be listening in relative proximity in time, as it were, to the moment the recording is made, that is to say, a few days or a few weeks afterwards. But who knows? You know, people could be listening to the recording I'm making right now, a year from now, 2 years from now, 10 years from now, who knows? And I'm mindful that when I speak, that I'm not only speaking out of the moment in which I live right now, and you are all present in this moment with me. We're all living together this moment that these words are being recorded. But I am also mindful that there is a kind of resonance of what I say extrapolating through time. And so I am also speaking to those in the future, whether it be the future of a week or a month or a year or 10 years. I am speaking to those in the future who hear my voice saying these words now. And in another sense, I am actually speaking from the future. I think of this often. I think of the time parameters, you know, that condition what I say in these NAB briefings. Those of you in the Gaia Navigation Experiment understand perfectly well how my briefings are timed and coordinated closely to real-time events in the journey of our planet, of the mothership. They are coordinated to their intentions and activities of the planetary animal mother, the divine Sophia that is the living presence of this planet, which is alive, which is conscious of itself, and in some fantastically beautiful and magnificent way, conscious of the presence of humanity on the planet, right down to every single individual person, every single human animal. So whenever I speak, whenever I undertake one of these NAB briefings or any other talk that I venture to record, I place myself in the time frame of this moment and in the larger time frame of the future moments. And I ask myself sometimes, you know, the question crosses my mind, well, what could I say to anyone who might fall upon this recording, who might be hearing me talk for the first time, you know, who might hear my voice for the first time? What could I say to another human animal that I will never meet that distinguishes me? But not in a narcissistic and self-announcing way, but distinguishes me by the message of the messenger. And I think about this a lot, and I think also about those who have listened to me many times and those who follow the Gaia Navigation Experiment. And ultimately, what I can say to them and practitioners of planetary tantra included is the same thing that I can say to anyone who happens to fall upon this recording and hear my voice for the first time at some indeterminate moment in the future. I can say that I have a message for the world, and it is time for the world to get this message. Now, my experience is, of course, my experience. I'm just another person, another individual. I'm just another human animal. And at the same time, I wonder if I can get it across. I wonder if I can really get it across to the world that the transpersonal is why we are here as persons and as individuals. We are here on this planet in a divine experiment. And you realize the meaning of your unique and individual personal life only when you see it in the frame of that experiment. can I get this message across? How can I get this message across? Not just to someone who hears me for the first time, but to those of you who have listened to me many times. And today, on Jan's birthday, and in Jan's presence, I am getting this message across. Going on 5 years ago now, back in May of the year 2008, I went up on a hill behind my house. And I went up there for a particular personal reason. I was in a personal situation. And it wasn't the first time I've been in this situation. Because I have defined myself as a sex and romance addict. And so throughout my life, I've had a number of romances involved with a certain degree of sexual addiction. And I was in the full throes of such an experience in May of 2008. Now, of course, it goes without saying that that moment and that experience, forming as it did a pattern of my life, is entirely, totally, and entirely personal. And you might wonder, well, who cares about my personal experiences? And how would my personal experiences have any larger significance in the world? How would they carry a message for humanity? Well, I ask you to leave your minds open to this proposition that the most passionate personal experiences you feel, when you feel them authentically, without pretense or pretending, and without narcissistic self-importance, when you feel them in the way that you feel a storm that overtakes you, that you cannot resist, I put it to you as a proposition that such personal experiences may contain something more than personal. And that is how it was with me. So I'm just relating here the personal trappings of this experience in my intention to get across to you and to reach you, to reach the world with a transpersonal message. And I assure you, if you continue to listen to me and continue to follow what I say, that you have the opportunity to realize that this message has never, ever been said before. So I was up there on the hill on a beautiful day in May, and I went up there with a specific purpose, which is to ask the Nahual a question. To put it into Buddhist terminology, which might be more user-friendly to certain people, the void. I went up there to ask the void a question. I do have conversations with the void. But I do them out in nature, and I scream. I scream my questions to the wind. And I wait for the wind to answer. On that day, I went up to a place which I call the Hill of the Ava Gardner Oaks. And I stood up there among these beautiful oaks, these dwarf oaks that are indigenous to the Serranía de Ronda of Spain. I stood up there in the afternoon sunlight, feeling a breeze that blew in from the northwest. And I knew that this breeze was the breath of the Nahual. And so I spoke my question into the breath of the breeze to have it answered to me from the breath of the breeze. This is what I did on that fine and lovely, splendid day of May, 2008. And my question was really quite specific to my situation at the time. I had made contact with a woman that I didn't know. I'll call her JK. And she was going to come and see me. And I was wondering what this was all about. And I was wondering if she was what she and I together imagined. Because I'd never met this woman in my life, you know. And I was going to do to meet her in Ronda, Spain on the 7th of, or 8th of August, excuse me, 2008, 8808. So this was a couple of months before that, and I was curious about this meeting due to happen in the future. And so I went up and I asked the Nahual, I asked the void this question. I said, "Hey, tell me what's going on here. Clue me in, please. Is this woman really to be my tantrika in the first act of consort yoga of a planetary scale? Or is that just a fantasy of mine?" That was exactly the language of my question. Do you see the syntax of that question? Is she really so-and-so, what I imagine her to be? Or is this just a fantasy of mine? Well, on that day, I stood among the oaks on the Ava Gardner Hill, and I screamed my question into the wind, and the wind came back in fantastic surges across the oaks. And the wind came back from the northwest, which was, by the way, where she was located relative to my position at that time. And it came back in huge, huge gales over the hillside. But of course, the wind has no voice, and there is only silence in the wind. And so the Nahual answered me with the silence inside the wind. And I held that answer in my mind as I walked down jauntily, as the Nahual sometimes does, in my jaunty manner, in my catwalk manner. I walked down from the hill and took the dirt path. And as I was coming down that path, a number of things happened simultaneously. The first thing was that I got the answer in my mind, the answer to my question, and I got the answer as it congealed into a thought out of the silence that was poured into my mind by the wind. Remember that my question was, is this woman, JK, really to be my tantrika in the first true act of consort yoga on a planetary scale? Or is it just a fantasy of mine? And the answer was, what difference does it make as long as it's true? Now, I don't know what you hearing me right now might think, But to my mind, that was one hell of an answer. And it stopped me in my tracks. And then a flock of birds flew past my head on the left. And I looked around at the hillside. And I had a flash in which I saw Jan Kerouac. Now, bear in mind that the JK of this particular episode in my long history of sexual and romantic addiction, which goes back about 9,000 years, if you care to go back that far, the JK of this May 2008 episode was not Jan Kerouac. Fact of it is, in the so-called reality of the ordinary world, Jan Kerouac died in June of 1996. But nevertheless, at that moment, when I stood there, really stunned, just stopped in my tracks, and I got a flash. And I saw Jan Kerouac as if she were standing in this, I don't know, this group, this congregation in a way. It was quite a large group, so I guess you could call it a congregation. In this congregation of luminous women, whom I call habitually by the name Dakini. So I got this answer to my question, and at the very same moment, I got this picture of Jan standing in the company of these luminous Dakinis. And I felt this assurance that hit me like a bolt of lightning. It hit me like a shock right down into my cellular substance of my body, the certainty, the absolute certainty. Oh, look, there's Jan, my JK, the Nawaz woman, and she's standing in the company of this group of Dakinis. But who is this group of Dakinis? What is this group of Dakinis? So that's the way it came down. And as I continued in the mood of that moment, in the mania, the divine mania that I entered at that moment and that I stayed in for 8 months or so, more or less, I continued to hold this picture of Jan in my mind. And from that moment in May into through June, July, until the 8th of August, I had an ongoing realization that never faded. It was as if I was continually in the same thought, and that thought was not just a thought that I had, but it was a thought that landed in my mind in the way a drop of dew lands on a mirror. So the drop of dew, the drop of nectar, lands on the mirror. It's a crystalline nectar sitting in a perfect drop on the surface of a mirror, and my mind is the mirror. So in the mirror, the reflection of the drop appears as my thinking. It appears as a thought I had, but it's never a thought I made. It's not a thought I constructed, nor is it a thought that I can deconstruct. It is a non-elaborated thought. And it's only a thought because it falls on the mirror. If it's not on the mirror, it's just a drop of elixir hanging in space. And I continued to contemplate this drop of elixir. It's as if this drop of elixir was glittering with various rays of light. Glints of light or refractions of light came off it and shattered into my mind. And I called those shatterings realizations of the Dakini wisdom. Spontaneous realizations of Dakini wisdom that were given to me to prepare me to receive the terma of Gaia awakening. Now, once again, bear with me if I return to a consideration I made earlier in this talk. Put yourself in my skin, you know? Consider how I consider what I do. And as I said just a while ago, I consider what I say as it goes out into the immediate or proximate time frame of the next day or week or month, and as it goes out to humanity in the future. The term of Gaia awakening is not something that humanity at large has yet to comprehend or to even register. But the term of Gaia awakening is in the mind of humanity already, just like that dewdrop of crystalline elixir was in the mind of John Lamb Lash in May 2008. And all it takes is a clearing of the mirror of the mind of humanity for the term of Gaia awakening to be revealed to all of humanity, to every single living human person. That revelation is ongoing. And what I have to say to you today, with great pleasure, is about the ultimate secret of the Gaian Dakini wisdom. If you look at the terma of Gaia awakening, which you can find in the Planetary Tantra section of metahistory.org, you will find that it consists of three simple instructions. These are the instructions of the Diamond Sky Dakinis, or aspects of the mind and intelligence of the living planet and the divine presence of this planet that was called in the ancient mysteries Sophia, meaning wisdom. These three instructions are the prerequisites for each human animal to participate in the correction of the wisdom goddess, to participate consciously and intentionally in the life of the earth, and to realize the designs and purposes of the divine experiment unfolding on this planet. These three instructions of the Diamond Sky Dakinis are deceptively simple. They are instructions that come from the planetary animal mother herself regarding how she requires you to live if you wish to interact with her and to be part of her supernatural and natural magic. So if you wish to bond consciously with the earth and to put your life and your personal reality into the transpersonal framework of her life, she requires that you observe these three principles. One, you cannot become anything but more beautiful. Two, love and the supernatural operate on the same frequencies. Three, samsara and disenlightenment have the same look. Now, there are other aspects of planetary tantra which I call the ritual or procedural aspects. That is the Gayan tantric vow, the iron bonding, and the pronouncement of the name of the sixth dreaming identity of the Aeon Sophia, Vivi, Vajravilasi. These are the simple conditions, these are the simple ritual procedures to enter into interactive magic with Gaia and to become part of her solution, and thereby, I would emphasize, separate yourself from the problem of humanity. Separate yourself from the problem of the human condition and, in effect, transcend the human condition. So all of this is inherent. All of this is comprised, as it were, in the term of Gaia Awakening. And I have written it down. I was given to understand that there was a part of the term of Gaia Awakening to write down the three instructions, the secret name of Sophia's Dakini identity, and the conditions for performing the Gayan tantric vow. That's really all there is to it, along with the instructional mandala of the Shakti cluster. I was given to understand when I received the terma that I would write these matters down. But before I received the terma, I was given other instructions that I have not yet shared publicly. I just want to make it clear that the terma came to me in two forms simultaneously. It came to me in the instructions to be written down and the instructions to be given verbally or orally and not written down. And so my message today, in the presence of Jan Kerouac, is about the instructions that were not written down. Now, I don't know if I can convince you how I felt when I received these instructions. I won't try to convince you. I can't convince anybody of anything. But I can describe to you exactly how it felt, if I might use that term. I can describe to you the experience of realizing something in your own mind with a certainty that surpasses all comprehension, with absolute certainty and confidence. And so I pass on to you this oral instructions that I received with the same certainty and confidence in which I received them. I feel somewhat awkward in calling them instructions because they're actually more like just sayings, you know? And at that moment that I first heard these words I'm going to pronounce now, they came to me as if they were part of a conversation that started at that moment. Let's say that this conversation had a certain two or three recurrent phrases in it, you know? Things that you just kind of continually repeat, you know? Like if you're in the Boy Scouts, you know, to use a silly example, you have the Boy Scout motto, be prepared. And during the course of activities of being a Boy Scout, you might find it appropriate to repeat this at times. It's just a saying that you repeat because you're in the Boy Scouts, you know, be prepared. And so I understood that these two or three sayings were not of the same caliber as the written down instructions in the Terma of Gaia Awakening. No, they were of a different caliber. They were of a different tone and temper, but they were equally important to the realization of the purpose of that terma. And what is the purpose of that terma? It is to allow human animals to be consciously and intentionally interactive with the planetary animal mother. The terma of Gaia Awakening presents the instructions from Gaia Sophia that describe how to be interactive with her and how to achieve magical and intentional involvement in her designs and purposes. It is simply that. These other oral sayings are more like familiar phrases that just happen in the minds of people who undertake the opportunity presented by the terma. For instance, the first one that came to me on that May Day on the hill was in the form of a question. How much beauty can you take? Now this question, how much beauty can you take, comes up in the minds of people who find themselves in proximity to the power of this terma. Those who find themselves by the natural attractions they feel as a human animal to the planetary animal mother who gives them life, by that attraction to the mother, and in that play of erotic and maternal attraction between human animal and the planet, this is one of the questions that comes up. How much beauty can you take? And this is the first question that comes to the mind spontaneously when you approach the realm of planetary tantra. So that question came up on that day. And I was dazzled by that question and enchanted. And then at the moment that that question came up, and bear in mind, again, if you can, that every single thought that I had on that May day in 2008, and every single thought that I had for 8 months following that, was just really one thought. It was all one thought. It was like the rays and refractions of light coming from one jewel, from one dewdrop of Dakini elixir. It was all the same thought seen in various refractions of light, in various refractions of a luminosity of a totally spontaneous arising of enlightenment. And that is the nature of your own thought, even your ordinary thought. So I was in this kaleidoscopic light of enlightenment at that moment, and I stayed in it, and I still am in it as I speak now. And it was in that ambiance, if you will, of absolute lucidity and unwavering confidence in the power of my own mind to liberate itself, that these sayings arose. And it was also an interactive process, because like any human animal, like any one of you who listens to my words and listens to me speak, in the course of listening to me, questions come. You question things. The mind automatically produces questions. And so I heard this question: how much beauty can you take? And then I had my own question. It was like, well, wow, this is Dakini. He's asking me, how much beauty can I take? And how am I going to answer this question? I mean, how can I handle this kind of stuff? And what do they require for me to even answer that question? Bingo. The second message. We hold you to your highest desire. So, again, picture this, you know, picture this. Man standing on a hillside in the Serra Nevada of Spain, arrested in his own thought process, which is not even his own, and thinking, hey, I'm seeing all these Dakinis in front of me, as it were in the sky, which is the classical Tibetan visualization, by the way. And out of the sky, or out of the sky of my mind, or the mind of my sky, they're saying, we hold you to your highest desire. I mean, what a fantastic thing to say. We hold you to your highest desire. And so now, I tell you, in the Gaia Navigation Experiment, and I inform the world at large, that the magical powers of the planet Earth itself reach you and engage you by holding you to your highest desire. And this is an inescapable truth, and it is veracious. It can be proven and demonstrated. So, there I was. Try to picture me. I mean, this is tumultuous. It's like a tumultuous serenity of a lucidity of a non-mind thinking something that is beyond conceptual elaboration. Yet, miraculously, in some manner, it comes into human language. And so there are two sayings that played in the mind of that moment. One, the question, how much beauty can you take? It's a really great come on line, by the way. And the other one, they hold you to your highest desire. And this is something that those involved in planetary tantra are going to say now and then, because it just comes up in the practice. It comes up in the course of living in planetary tantra over and over again. The realization dawns on you. that the Dakinis of Gaia hold you to your highest desire. And so there I was. I'm talking now about the moment when the main turtan became the main turtan. And at that moment, I was, as I always am, an inquisitive child. And I have the inquisitive mind of the Anthropos, the original mind, as you all do. That is the mind that allows you to listen to what I'm saying right now and to understand what I'm saying. And I guess what I can emphasize, because I can't really elaborate, and as I said, I can't convince you of anything, but I guess what I can emphasize about my experience that makes it yours, because that's all I can say about my enlightenment, is that it is yours, is that you reach wonderment at the same moment that you reach what is real. And unless you reach wonderment, there is nothing real. And so I was in a state of wonderment, wonderment, total wonderment. It's a manic condition. Most definitely is. And everything depends on how you handle it. Okay? So, mania, or as Plato called it, you know, divine mania, is where you go from here. And everything depends upon how you can handle it. So at that time, I was, you know, sober. I mean, I was rational. You've got to get this. I was rational. Inside this transconceptual lucidity. And I was like the inquisitive child asking questions. And so I said, oh, wow, hold me to my highest desire. Well, what is my highest desire? You know, what is my highest desire? Ask yourself that question when you get up in the morning. Oh, yeah, I get it. Oh, do I get it? Yeah, it's all about desire. She connects to our desire. She needs our desire. The planetary animal mother endowed us with desire because that is the power that bonds us to her life force. And through desire, and only through desire, do we become intimate with her designs and purposes. And I says, all this is flooding over me. I'm in a wind tunnel of lucidity. This is how it feels to stand in the presence of the Shakti cluster and the power of these Gaian Dakinis. It's like being in a wind tunnel. So I'm standing there. To all external appearances, I'm this man standing on a hillside in Andalusia. And the inquisitive mind of the child is still running. You know, you cannot shut it down. You cannot shut down this capacity of the Anthropos, you know, this talent of that luminous child who just wants to know and learn. Know and learn. And it's, I wanted to know more. I wanted to learn. Ah, they hold me to their highest desire. And I'm like contemplating this proposition, okay? Contemplating this proposition, which is spinning around me and around me and around me like a tornado, like a soft, deep, still tornado. And I'm in the eye of this tornado. And then guess what? I'm saying to myself, thoroughly mindful that I am being observed, I say to myself, wow, okay, the dukkhinis hold me to my highest desire. That's tops. That's about as far as my mind can go. But you know what? I'm going to go one notch further, and I'm going to ask, well, what is their highest desire? What is the highest desire of the dukkhinis? Of the planet itself? I did ask this question. I seriously did ask this question. And it came to me exactly in the way I'm describing to you here. Going on 5 years ago now. And the answer to that question came to me as well. And I've only told that answer to, I think, 3 or 4 people in this world. Today, on this special day, this day, when I'm rooted like a tree, and I've got those sit down, can't cry, oh Lord, gonna die blues, I tell the world the answer to that question. The highest desire of the Gayan Dukkhinis of this planet is that you command them. And that is the ultimate secret of the Gayan Dukkhinis. It is the ultimate secret of their power. Namely, that they express and manifest their power as you command them to do so. You. You know, as I present Planetary Tantra, which came into definition in the fall of the year 2008 with my writings on Planetary Tantra on medhistory.org, as I develop it and I present it and I teach it, I continually wonder if it's getting across to the world and how, you know? And one of the things that crosses my mind is concerns the matter of religion and the widespread understanding of God or of the Creator that has been operating in human minds through untold centuries. And I realize that in the human understanding of the Creator so far, no matter what religious framework you put it in, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, whatever, wherever this deistic concept is present, there is a general assumption that God has certain wishes regarding the human race, that the Creator God has, as it were, rules, or, as they're called, commandments, you know, like the Ten Commandments. And so, human animals on this planet tend to think, and have tended to think, that we are here to follow the commandments of the Creator. But I am here to tell you that that is entirely wrong, and it always has been wrong, and there is no way ever that it can be right. I'm here to tell you that the primary religious principle that has dominated human experience is an error. It is an error, a mistake. It is a mistake to believe that human animals are meant to follow the commandments of the Creator God. That's a con, and that's a lie. And that lie has been used and continues to be used to perpetrate some enormous acts of evil on this planet. I'm not claiming that it is the sole and exclusive source of evil behavior, but it has certainly been the overarching agenda for a great deal of evil committed on this planet. Therefore, it is not only a serious mistake, philosophically speaking, if I might use that term, but it is behaviorally a drastic and disastrous mistake to believe that human animals are here on earth to follow the commandments of the Creator. So my message to humanity is that the source of our life and of all life on this planet is the planet itself. The immediate and imminent source of life on the planet is the planet itself. And I say that the planet is an animal. She is alive. She is self-conscious. She is conscious of her own situation. She is conscious of the presence of humanity down to every single individual person. And she wants humanity to command her what to do. Try to get that into your mind. Now, those of you in the Gaia Navigation Experiment will see where I'm going with all this. Those of you who haven't followed my talks over the past year or so may not see it as clearly. I began the Gaia Navigation Experiment in June of 2011 by stating a proposition in the form of a challenge or an opportunity. I don't ask anyone to believe anything. I say, here we have an opportunity. Here we have a challenge. Would you like to undertake this challenge and see where it goes? In the many years that I studied Gnosticism and the mystery religions, as they're called, I pondered closely on the concept of correction, which is found in the Gnostic writings. According to these Gnostic visionaries of the pagan mystery schools, the Aeon Sophia, that is to say, the indwelling, living, divine presence of the earth, was due in some future moment to undergo a correction. That correction is what we would call now a reset, that she would reset the whole human experiment on earth according to its original purpose in her mind, because she is the author of this experiment. And that is called the correction of the Divine Sophia. And I propose that the initial conditions of this correction are being set between March 2011 and March 2014. And I proposed, furthermore, that human animals and witnesses to that correction who wish to participate, who wish to know how it is unfolding, can do so. And it is possible to participate consciously and intentionally in setting these conditions of Sophia's correction. So as this grand proposition unfolded, another aspect of the cosmic scenario came into sharp definition. I stated, on the basis of my shamanic investigation and my practices as a Turton throughout my entire life, I stated that the Aeon Sophia originally conceived the experiment now unfolding on this planet. Even before she herself became the planet, and without knowing that she would become the planet, she conceived this experiment as an intervention scenario, or what is called in classical comparative mythology an avataric descent, the descent of an avatar. So the divine Sophia, a cosmic divinity of the feminine gender, conceived the experiment we are now living on this planet. And long, long, long aeons of time before the present moment, she made a pact with humanity to come, that is to say, us now. She made a pact with that strain of the human race that would be in the experiment that we are now in. She made a pact with us. Anthropos 10. And in this pact, she committed herself to intervene on Earth if the experiment went terminally wrong. She made a pact that she herself would act as an avatar and would appear in the scenario of history in real time, in the real physical, social, and historical circumstances of this experiment, and intervene to correct it in some crucial way, in some crucial and critical manner. So, the main Turton, John Lash, has been developing this proposition of Sophia's intervention in the divine experiment that she conceived for a couple of years now. That is the purpose of the GNE, the Gaia Navigation Experiment. It's a learning and discovery framework for developing this proposition of intervention. But up until now, I have not been able to make one point absolutely lucidly clear to the crew members. And I say on this sacred day that I am ready to make this proposition clear, not only to crew members, but to the world at large. I make it clear to anyone who has the scope of imagination and the sobriety to comprehend what I am talking about. This is real. This is literal and imaginative at the same time. It is cosmic, and it is absolutely a matter of your individual comprehension and choice as well. Up until now, in proposing that the Aeon Sophia made a pact to intervene in her experiment, I did not state the condition that she requires for her own intervention. Did I? You in the crew who follow me so closely know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you? When Sophia made a pact with the Anthropos, before the experiment even began to unfold, she conceived in her divine intelligence the conditions of the pact to be compatible with the sovereign freedom of the human animal. Because she, as an aeon, in the divine order, as a true goddess among the realm of the gods and goddesses, she holds freedom in the highest regard. And so the freedom of the human animal must be a component in the pact. And I tell you today, and I conclude my briefing with the exact description of how that is so. I know that some of you whose imaginations now carry the scenario of the mysteries. I know that some of you who understand the intention of the divine Sophia to intervene in this experiment and correct it at the last moment are wondering what's taking her so long. I know that you're wondering what's holding her up. Why isn't she going to act? And when is she going to act? When is this intervention, the Kalki Kali avatar, going to happen? What's the delay? What is she waiting for? I can tell you today that she is waiting for your command. She is waiting for you to command her intervention. And that's all there is to it. The highest desire of the Gayan Dakinis and the ultimate secret of their power is the highest desire of the planetary animal mother herself, consistent with the terms of her pact, the pact she made with humanity. And that desire is that you command her to intervene, that you command her intervention. Hence, her intervention is a supernatural and superhuman act that depends upon human complicity and human consent. And that, as far as I know, is the highest and most voracious religious conception possible to the human mind.
I had a woman, Lord, she lived down by the mine. Never seen it done. Oh Lord, never stop crying. Then one day my woman up and died. Oh Lord, she up and died now. Hey, she just up and died. Well, she wanted to fly, and the only way to fly is die. She's flying so free and easy in the sky. Oh Lord, look at me here. Hey, I'm rooted like a tree here. Got to sit down, can't cry. Oh Lord, I'm gonna die in blue. Got to sit down, can't cry.